This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The resignation of Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education marks the end of an era. Conservative causes like school choice had an advocate in Washington like no other with her leading the Department of Ed. We wanted to unpack DeVos's time in the Capitol and think about how much of her agenda might outlive the Trump era. Today, we're talking with two people who followed DeVos's career closely over the years in Michigan and beyond. Let's start out with Chastity Pratt. She is the Wall Street Journal's Education Bureau Chief based in Detroit, and she's been reporting on education from here for a long time. Chastity, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Can you take us all the way back to when Betsy DeVos first showed up in the education world? I mean, she did not have a background as an educator herself.
No, she did not. A lot of Betsy DeVos's involvement with education came through her advocacy for charter schools and school choice. I'll take you back even further to the early 2000s, or maybe even 2000, when there was that ballot measure in Michigan about vouchers. You know, the DeVos family was really involved in pushing for vouchers in Michigan some 20 years ago. That voucher ballot proposal failed, but from there, you know, their involvement, her involvement in school choice and charter school advocacy increased. Some would even say that the charter school landscape that we have in Michigan, and certainly which is the majority of schools in Detroit, was because Betsy DeVos and her husband, their family, really put a lot of money behind pushing for increased charter school, you know, just across the state. And so now we have a majority of the children in Detroit attending charter schools. And I think it's the second or third largest charter district in the nation, largely because DeVos lobbied for it and put money behind politicians who would curry favor for charter schools and state policy.
There is no question the effect that she's had on education in Detroit. What kind of influence do you see her exerting on education more broadly in Michigan? How much change was she able to affect?
The charter school and school choice lobby was hugely impactful in Michigan, right? So there were laws that expanded school choice. And what I mean by school choice is people being able to go to, you know, different school districts or to charter schools. And, you know, I remember back in the day when I was at the Detroit Free Press, we did what had to be 8 years ago now, a huge charter school project that basically laid out how charter schools became dominant in Detroit, in Flint, in other areas that are largely urban across Michigan. And what that really showed is that the charter schools, I mean, we're 20 some years into charter schools in Michigan, and yet and still it's only been in the past few years that they could say definitively that charter schools are maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 points ahead of public schools. It took 2 decades to gain very small achievement gains for charter schools to be able to say they're better than public schools. And even now it's very marginal at best. And then the other thing is, you know, the impact being when you spread charter schools the way Michigan has without very much accountability, with this free market mentality. A lot of the charter schools in Michigan, very much different from other states, are management company charter schools, for-profit companies running these charter schools. So it was a total flip-flop in how public education had been meted out in the state, now having these for-profit charter schools that don't have as much accountability as charter schools in other states, now really educating a large percentage of students, definitely in Detroit and across the state. You have, what, 300 charter schools? You got
that sounds right.
More than 100, yeah. More than 100,000. Like, so now we're looking at 10% of the kids in the state in charter schools, if not more at this point. It's hugely impactful.
What can we say about the tools that Betsy DeVos used? You mentioned the power of her purse in funding ballot campaigns. Were there other methods that she was able to use effectively to make the changes that she wanted to do?
money is king. You know, when you get a Republican legislators, when you give money to them on the basis that they will support school choice and charter schools, that is hugely impactful. So that was really the big tool. You know, you want to be a Republican legislator in this state, we'll give you lots of money, but you have to do the work of school choice and charter schools. So that really led to the impact, and I think put her at the forefront to become the U.S. Education Secretary because of the impact that that their money had.
You know, you touched on this a little bit, but can we say that the changes that she advocated for helped kids in Detroit get into better schools? What kind of things are you looking at when we assess the claims that competition will improve education options?
Well, you got to start with whether that was really the point, right? So you would have the charter school advocates saying that parents are in schools that don't work. They deserve a choice. They deserve options. And a lot of parents who were really disgusted with their charter, with their, you know, traditional public schools, were willing to give charter schools a chance. But what got really confused in the whole process was whether or not the charter school movement was offering a choice or a better choice. Parents interpreted that to mean that these were going to be better choices. And for more than two decades, charter schools were not better choices. They were really on par with traditional public schools for the better part of two decades.
You know, her situation, her profile was pretty high. The Secretary of Education is not usually a household name. That certainly was not the case for Betsy DeVos. I can't remember any other secretaries of education who were parodied on Saturday Night Live. We had Kate McKinnon playing the education secretary. Why do you think she became such a controversial figure beyond the world of education?
I mean, you know, remember back to 2018 when she was on with Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. It was a hugely controversial interview because Leslie Stahl asked her simplest questions and she couldn't answer them. She couldn't even cite Michigan performance status, academic achievement stats. You know, she couldn't say how well or how badly Michigan students were performing, yet she had been involved in schools in Michigan for years and years and years. So, and then there was that instance where there was the debate around guns in schools, and she made a comment about teachers should have guns in case there's a bear attack. I mean, there were these little gaffes along the way that, you know, people clung to and said, well, who's this person? Why is she the U.S. Education Secretary? But to be sure, she has a huge following among conservatives, right? Because her whole tact was to come into the Department of Education to temper the government's involvement in schools. Her sort of mission or her mantra was that government has never made anything cheaper or better, and that's really apparent in schools. So we need to pull back government involvement in schools and let the local school districts decide everything. That was hugely popular with conservatives. Fiscal conservatives. And so, you know, she had a lot of support from her side of the aisle, but on the other side of the aisle, a very vocal side of the aisle, teachers' unions and school districts where charter schools were pervasive and not doing well were saying she was destroying schools.
What's on your mind about how she ended her time in Washington?
She was the longest standing cabinet member and one of the first to leave the cabinet after the mob stormed the Capitol. So, you know, whatever you think of Betsy DeVos, whether you think that she did some harm when it came to Title IX or, you know, student loan protections, or whether you think that she was the best thing since, you know, conservatism for the Department of Ed, she did stand up last week and say, I'm out of here. I can't stand behind what is going on with this administration in terms of, you know, the mob that attacked the Capitol.
Chastity Pratt is Education Bureau Chief for the Wall Street Journal, coming to us from her home in Detroit. Chastity, thank you.
Anytime.
Here to talk us through Betsy DeVos's impact at the helm of the Department of Education As well as what her legacy might look like is John Vallant. He's a senior fellow in the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. John, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Thanks for having me.
So what have Betsy DeVos's top priorities and biggest impacts been? I mean, through the whole range of K through 12 and higher education during the past 4 years, what do you think of as her signature work?
So I think from the get-go, her top priority has been getting Americans to think differently about public schools and the role of private providers in public education. So she pushed very hard, really from before she was even in office, to advocate for alternatives to traditional public schooling, for private school vouchers and for charter schools. And she didn't get very far. She certainly didn't get very far when it comes to legislation on those issues. She probably had more influence through her advocacy work before she became secretary, actually, than she did as secretary. But that persisted as kind of a primary focus in K-12. I would say the other big priority related to deregulation and pulling back the federal role in education. And a lot of that had to do with pulling back civil rights protections that the federal government had been providing to students. So a primary function of the federal government in education is to protect student civil rights. And through a number of different ways, she and her administration really did pull back when it comes to protecting transgender students or victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment and students of color who have been subject to harsh discipline. And so really, I would say that her priorities have been deregulation and providing alternatives to the traditional public school system.
What does this mean for regulations that she passed that the Biden administration might like to see reexamined? Do you think that it will be possible if the incoming secretary chooses to alter some changes that she made?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so if you want to have a lasting impact as an education secretary, really what you need to do is get legislation done through Congress. And we had very little legislation in education over the last 4 years. So there won't be that lasting impact through legislation. The sort of second best approach as far as having lasting impact is through regulation, through a formal rulemaking process, where you sort of interpret how existing legislation will be implemented. And she really didn't do much even in terms of regulation, with the exception of regulation on Title IX. So we now have the federal government's position on Title IX, which really looks over how accusations of sexual assault and sexual harassment are handled, looks quite different. That will be difficult for the Biden administration to undo, or at least to undo quickly. I think they certainly are going to try, but that went through a more formal rulemaking process that now would have to be undone. Then there's a sort of next tier of action that a Secretary of Education can take, which is what we call sub-regulatory guidance. And often it's letters that sort of suggest what the government's position is on an issue and make recommendations to school districts. And there's been a dance kind of back and forth from the Obama administration to the Trump administration and now to the Biden administration, where you would have one administration put forth some guidance. So the Obama administration, for example, put forth guidance about how schools should handle student discipline so as not to discriminate towards students of color. The DeVos administration threw away that guidance, which they can do just with a stroke of a pen. But when it comes to that type of guidance, the Biden administration will sort of undo what the DeVos administration and the Trump administration just did. So it varies sort of depending on how the work was done. But I would say that the actual list of legislative accomplishments and even lasting regulations is pretty thin.
During her time in office, Betsy DeVos got a lot of criticism for reducing protections for students' civil rights. Can you talk a little bit about what you noticed about the rights that she prioritized and those that she didn't?
Sure. So it's useful to take a second and think about what the federal government does in education, because education is primarily the function of local and state governments. The federal government's role exists in large part to protect the most vulnerable students. So the federal government puts about 10% of the money into our education system. And when it puts money in, it's disproportionately going to students in poverty and to students with disabilities. And as sort of part of that broader obligation, it protects student civil rights. So it is responsible for making sure that students aren't discriminated against on the basis of their sex or their race, and sort of on from there. And the Democratic and Republican administrations have taken very different postures toward that. So what the Obama administration believed was that it had an obligation to look for systemic issues in addition to investigating individual cases of accused discrimination and civil rights violations. So it was on the lookout, for example, for whether there were certain districts where students of color were discriminated against when it comes to how they were disciplined, or and they were concerned about transgender students' rights and bathroom use and issues along those lines. The position of the DeVos administration was very different in that they were not nearly as willing to focus on systemic issues when it comes to civil rights, and thought that their obligations were much more on just investigating individual cases as they came up. And so they pulled, you know, back on their protections for transgender students and really lots of other groups. And that extended to higher education too, when it came to protections for students who had been defrauded by for-profit colleges. And so so in my own view, it will be a welcome change when I think the Biden administration will start to think again about the federal government's role in looking after systemic issues in addition to just those individual cases. But it's really a very different philosophy about how we approach civil rights.
If you could sum up her legacy from her time as education secretary in a sentence, what would you say?
Well, I'll try a word. I think politicization. So what Betsy DeVos will be remembered for more than anything else is that she took issues that either had been fairly bipartisan in the past or didn't necessarily have to be politically charged, and she charged them. And so I'll give you a couple of examples of this. One was charter schools. And for a long time, they'd enjoyed some support from both the Republican and Democratic parties. So the Clinton administration and the Obama administration had both supported charter schools. And Betsy DeVos, by being such a polarizing figure and being paired with President Trump, who obviously is just as polarizing, she charged that issue and caused divisions between Republicans and Democrats. And she would say that I think that part of her legacy that she wants is that she changed the conversation. I think that she did change the conversation in the sense that she charged an issue, and we now have much less room for bipartisan agreement than we did before.
John Vallant is a senior fellow at the Brown Center on Education Policy at the Brookings Institution. John, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, April.